Hey, this is Ray Santiago from Ash vs. Evil Dead, and you're listening to Guess What? You're Wrong.
Hello, horror fiends, and welcome to Guess What? You're Wrong, the podcast where we dive into all things horror and spoil the hell out of every movie we discuss. With me, Big D, as your host, be prepared for a terrifyingly good time. From classic slasher flicks to contemporary horror masterpieces, we're going to explore the genre from every angle that we can and leave no stone unturned. Horror, prints, and shine. New conversations, same podcast. So buckle up, bonehead, because you're going for a ride.
Enjoy the show!
Now, before we get into this episode too far, I just got a little disclaimer here. First off, all audio used in this podcast is used under the protection of fair use. And as with all the movie reviews that I do here on Guess What? You're Wrong, we're going to spoil the hell out of every single thing we talk about. So, you have been warned. Hello and welcome back to another Value Mart shopping episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Now, today, where Dave is actually back, we're going to be covering, y'all know that we've been covering the Evil Dead franchise from start, and we've been going one a month, and Dave's been hanging in there like a champ.
And it's been rough, man, but plowing through.
It's rough rewatching these movies, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so terrible.
So today we are actually tackling Ash vs. Evil Dead, season one. There's no The Evil Dead. It's just Evil Dead. I got corrected by that before. So, Dave, how you been doing, man?
I've been good, man. It's been a lot trickier trying to squeeze in these episodes, even though they're, only 25, 30 minutes. I was suddenly feeling like this was as close to a homework assignment as I think I've ever had when it comes to the Evil Dead stuff. But I mean, that's not a complaint, but I was like, I don't have much time. I need to squeeze all this in before I have to start talking about it. I'm gonna look like an asshole.
I had every intention of breaking this up. I mean, 'cause 10 episodes and they're half an hour long. So it's not dramatically long. It doesn't take a lot of your time. So I was like, what I'm going to do, I don't want to stay up all night long, so I'm just going to watch a couple episodes every night. Next thing I know, I got a jar of moonshine's gone, and I'm finishing up episode 10, and I'm like, I got to go to sleep. I'm working. Dude, I can't stop watching it.
Yeah, you're like, wow, man, Pablo's got skin on his face. What the hell? Like, you have that sort of weird, did you have that weird drunken time travel vibe where you're like, wait a minute, I feel like I'm in the future, but I don't remember how I got here type of thing.
By the time I got to, honestly, by the time I got to episode 7, everything was kind of, I was kind of like, I was like, maybe I should turn this off and just finish tomorrow. Now, I finished it that night, but then the next day I did also go back in there and watch it from episode 7, 8, 9, and 10 as well, again. Because I just love this movie, or I'm sorry, this show. We can't technically consider it a movie, right?
Well, yeah. And well, I mean, Bruce Campbell, I think he even said something like, look at it as a movie cut up into 10 parts or something like that. And I feel like that is kind of appropriate for this type of franchise.
Well, yeah, that's something that I still hear today. People complaining they want more Ash. They want more Army of Darkness, more Evil Dead, the Raimi Evil Dead. But if you sit back and take a look at it, your average horror movie is about an hour and a half long, maybe hour and 45, right? Yeah. But if you get back and take a look at it, we get 5 movies, basically, out of these 3 seasons.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I think we did pretty good with what we got out of this.
Now, yeah, it's actually more than I could have asked for as a fan after the remake. I was very happy with the remake. And then, the idea of getting another movie was exciting, but the way that they just came out swinging with this show was, it was a godsend as far as I'm concerned.
Now, did you subscribe to Stars and
to watch this?
No, I was too cheap. I waited for the Blu-ray DVDs to come out, and I would buy that. I'd do a marathon session with a buddy of mine who loves these. So I guess I am a little partially to blame. I should have thrown some finances towards it when it was happening. I mean, I did, but should have shown better support. I was a poor fan.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm also the one to blame as well, because they always had these free trials for Starz. So I basically opened up like 6 email accounts just to keep getting the free trials whenever. And I'd started, you know, there's another episode coming out, hurt me get another free trial, you know? And I think the free trials, they were like 14-day free trial. So if you timed it right, you could get 2 episodes in. You know, I was to blame too. And then after it went off the air, then of course I may or may not have allegedly obtained them via torrent.
The high seas, as the kids say. Yeah.
And now I also did, when they came out on Blu-ray, I did also purchase the Blu-ray sets. So now, and you know, watching it in 4K it's awesome.
Yeah. It's just wonderful.
So when I think we have kind of a similar feel on this series, this franchise. So I'm going to ask you, when you first watched that first episode from season one, were you like a giddy little schoolgirl?
Yeah, I was, just by virtue of the fact that it was happening. It was right there in front of me, and I was so excited. But it was when Ash remembers how he accidentally released all the deadites again, when he wakes up hungover and realizes he got stoned and started reading from the book. That's when I was like, whoever is doing this knows exactly what they're doing. And I was beyond happy after that, because there's like, that's the joke. That's the thing that really gave me, as an old school fan, confidence that everything was going to be okay.
Yeah. He just kind of leans back. Oh
yeah. He's like, fuck. Yeah.
It's so Ash, you know, because he's just trying to get some young girl, and they're getting high, and you know, it's Ash. Hey, you want to hear some poetry? Check this out. I know.
What an asshole, man. You know, that's how deep in pussy fog he was at that moment. It doesn't matter what happened with this book. He may get some if he reads from this book. That kind of sums up male's perspective on life in general. So I think that's why I really like that.
They never answer the question if he actually got any that night or not.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah. Of course he would say he did.
Yeah, of course. It's Ash.
Yeah, yeah. But you'll never truly know. He's full of shit.
And then, you know, and it's shortly after this opening scene. Well, even this whole opening scene where he's putting on this man girdle, and, you know, he's tight. Ooh, one more. Ooh, there you go. And he's like, and then he gets his teeth. grabs the rubbers, tells Eli not to wait up for him. Dude, this was, wow. You know, and then we're also, one of the great things that I really like about this, we haven't even really gotten into the season yet. You know, we're just kind of crushing on the overall aspect of it. But one thing I really like about this is they introduced other characters, and they were able to develop those characters over time. And you actually began to like those characters. You fall in love with those characters, basically, like we have with Ash. You know, maybe not to that extent, but, you know, you have Kelly and Pablo. I mean, you can't have it anymore. Whenever I hear that there's a new Evil Dead coming out, I think, like, when Evil Dead Rise came out, I was, ooh, is Kelly and Pablo going to be in there? You know, yeah. Because it's like, they kind of fit into that whole aspect now, you know, of the Evil Dead world.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for them to have their own thing, you know?
I do hope they have something with them, because I was, even on this rewatch, I was pleasantly surprised at how much of an individual character Kelly and Pablo are. Like, they're very, as far as I'm concerned, they've become important to the lore of Evil Dead.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially going forward from, you know, 30 years after the events of, you know, Army of Darkness and Evil Dead and all that stuff, going forward from that point, they play a huge role. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's one of the questions I asked them at when I saw them at the, I don't know, at this horror con that was over here. And I was trying to see if they had any idea if there's going to be anything for them that was coming out. And they said that they hadn't gotten any phone calls, no emails, nothing from anybody.
That's a shame, man.
But they said the fans will dictate it. You know, I suppose if there's enough of us up there, I mean, Dana De Lorenzo she's been making the rounds a lot, and she is, if it happens, I think it's going to be because of how active she is in the community, trying to get people out there to say something for her and Pablo. Mm-hmm. Pablo, his name's not really Pablo.
He'll always be Pablo.
It's Pablo. But then, you know, what about, we're introduced in this episode, in the first episode as well, to Amanda Fisher. Now, she's a cop, right? I don't even remember. I had it pulled up. Remember what her name is. Amanda Fisher, Jill Marie Jones.
Okay. I had no idea.
We're introduced to her, you know, when we actually, this is where they're investigating some goings on in this house, her and her partner. And they find the wrist tattoo girl that Ash was with earlier. And this is, it throws you into this and it ties it together so perfectly. Because, you know, this scene that they're investigating just happens to be where this wrist tattoo girl is at. And so when they go in there to investigate, she turns around and, well, all hell breaks loose. You know, they did, they did a really, really good job on making her a deadite and how her head turns around. And, you know, I know that I was reading somewhere that they actually used like a gymnast or something that is very, very skilled in walking, or I can't remember how they did it, walking backwards, because they basically just have a mask on her head in the back.
Yeah.
So, you know, she turns around and it makes it look like she's all deformed and she's walking backwards and stuff. And I thought the visuals were awesome.
Yeah. That. Yeah. It, when I was watching it this time, it reminded me of that movie, I guess that came out a year or two ago, Malignant. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, I think
where, like the chick had the twin in the back of her head, and then she goes through like a police precinct kicking everybody's ass, but she's running backwards. That's sort of, couldn't help but wonder if they got at least some inspiration from a scene like this.
That's interesting. I had forgotten all about that until just Malignant sounded so familiar, and then when you made mention that she had that, yeah, I have seen that.
That movie that starts out relatively interesting and then loses its damn mind by the end. I loved every second of it, honestly. It was great. But yeah, I think the reason why is because I love that sort of gonzo aesthetic that The Evil Dead has inspired in a lot of other movies and whatnot. And yeah, this is a perfect example of that.
It is. And, you know, with this first season, first off, I mean, another thing, we have Vivian, who I know in the last episode we made mention of, she was the same woman that was in the basement of Evil Dead 2013. You know, now she just plays some old woman that is obsessed with Ash. That's what she looks like. You know, if you're, what woman wouldn't be, right?
Come on. Yeah, according to Ash.
And, you know, when Ash, one of the things that they changed was it's not S-Mart, and it's Value Mart. And it's all, you know, the legal reasons, you know, because S-Mart was actually introduced in the Army of Darkness, and they didn't have any legal rights to use anything from Army of Darkness in any of these shows. So that's why when he's reminiscing about 30 years ago when we were back at a cabin, they show clips from it, Evil Dead 1, Evil Dead 2, but they never make any mention of Army of Darkness at all. And that's exactly why they couldn't use S-Mart.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was kind of a off-putting at first, because you're like, Value Mart? What the hell's Value Mart? But then, you know, they work it in, and it works out pretty decent. But this whole opening scene where, you know, Ash goes in, he talks, first of all, his boss's name is Mr. Roper.
Yeah.
Remember Three's Company?
Yeah, and it's a big irony considering poor Suzanne Somers, man. She just—I think she—I read she was the last one of Three's Company that just passed away. So it's like, yeah, it was like a—that was like strange sort of serendipity that we bumped into that while that was happening.
Oh yeah, absolutely it was. And the whole scene where, you know, he's like, you know, stop acting like a retard. And I can say that because my gardener is one. It tells Ash, take these lights out back and be careful with them. And no matter how many times I see this, whenever I see this scene, I can't crack up laughing. I can't stop laughing. Now he picks up.
Does it remind you of Three Stooges? It
absolutely does. And every time I watch an episode of Three Stooges, I'll sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh, no matter how many times I've seen it. And, you know, my kids and everybody is staring at me like, that's not that funny. What do you? I loved it. And every time with those light bulbs, I love it.
It just goes on and on. And that's what I love about it. It seems like it goes on for 5 minutes. It's maybe 30 seconds, but it seems to take forever.
He drops them and then he's, ooh, and he tries to step backwards to try and step out of them. And he's just stepping all over. It's hilarious. It's hilarious, you know. But this is also Pablo for the first time as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pablo comes in and this whole I could spend an entire episode of this podcast talking about episode one, but we can't. You know, we're introduced to Pablo, we're introduced to Kelly in here, and then we meet Ruby. Well, we don't really meet Ruby yet. She's introduced when Amanda's in the restaurant. There's just so much in this first episode. Yeah, we left out the whole sex scene at the beginning. You know.
Oh yeah, that was rough.
You know, it was. We're coming for you, and he's like, "No, I gotta go." And he's Ash. It's got to be Ash. You know. And this whole scene too, when you know, we're skipping around here about it. Kelly, oh, filthy and fine. I said that to Dana DiLorenzo when I met her. She wasn't too impressed. Not at all. But
oh yeah, no, there's nothing like a fun little cringe moment with somebody you've always wanted to meet.
I was kind of like, ha ha ha. She's like, yeah. Like she's never heard that before, you know.
Right, yeah. Like, hilarious.
Oh, boy. And then, of course, you know, we have the ballerina doll comes in, tries to kill Ash. And it's interesting, you know, one of the things that's kind of written in the lore after these shows came out is that there's something, it's not just that Ash is prophesized to be the savior of mankind. There's actually something special within him that makes him the jefe. You know, as Pablo calls him. And even Pablo's brujo uncle says he's got it in him, but it's buried deep down inside. And I think that comes out a little bit when them stack of dolls are there and he just kind of like, he can sense it.
You know, mm-hmm. He's
like, oh. And of course, the doll comes at him. Pablo saves the day, though. And this is when, but that whole scene. Now, this is one thing, too, that they use CGI in this.
Yeah.
And I really love practical effects. I really prefer a lot of practical effects. And they use a lot of practical effects in this as well. But I think for money constraints, they couldn't make everything practical. And I understand that. You know, the whole doll scene was CGI, obviously, you can tell.
Yeah.
How do you think that played out, being CGI?
I didn't mind it, but I'm with you. I prefer the practical effects. But those things I can see just being absolutely time consuming. I can see practical effects making more sense on a movie set than a TV set. So I kind of gave them a pass because on some weird level, watching those effects, a lot of them are kind of cheesy. And because of that, I feel like they're at least sort of honoring the spirit of the originals by not trying to make it too glossy. Like it is glossy, but it's obviously a little cartoony as well. So it felt like it did strike a good balance. So I didn't mind so much, but yeah, if I had my druthers, it would have been practical effects all the way.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, Bruce Campbell said is that people ask him all the time, what did you prefer doing, making movies or making the Ash vs. Evil Dead show? And he said, by far, making the show. because they'd go and they'd film for a couple hours and he'd be done for the day.
Mm.
But in a movie, you're on set for days upon days upon days upon days, getting blood and, you know, everything thrown at you and all this stuff. So he much preferred making the show, which is understandable.
Yeah. And not only that, but he's got a couple of other people who can act as targets for him.
Yeah.
So it's not just him getting nailed with all that viscera and nastiness. You know, you've got Pablo and Kelly who, well, mostly Pablo kind of takes the brunt of it.
Yeah. Here, I sharpened your bottle for you, he says. Use your bottle. I sharpened it for you.
Poor Pablo, that part where he's just suffering PTSD in the car while he's driving down the road and just blood's all over his face. I felt that.
He gets a little towelette. Here, I got a little towelette.
That poor bastard.
What is Ash say? I can't even get it up without a good hit to the chin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like... Yeah, Ash has never heard of shell shock or PTSD. That's for pussies.
he's far past that stuff. Yeah. You know, Ash is very reluctant in the first part of this episode. Actually, for most of this episode, you know, he wants to run away. He doesn't want any part of it. He wants to run away, you know. And then that's when, you know, Kelly has this phone call with her dad. Her and Pablo run off to go see what's going on with her dad. But I got to make a stop off. I know somebody that can help. Of course, it's Ash. And this is that scene where Ash finally realizes I should have never tried running. This is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole scene, the attack of the Deadites and Vivian, when Ash.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. I was like, sitting there the whole time, all excited. And the whole scene with him jumping in the air. Man,
it was electrifying. Yeah. Him, the slow mo with his stump. And it just perfectly, you know, lines into the chainsaw and he is now complete. It is so fantastic.
He is.
Oh, yeah. The slow-mo Superman scene where he finally gets his chainsaw back.
Yeah. And this is when he, you know, and the music, they play that music and you know that Ash is back and he's back with his one-liners early on. You know, he pushes that little lever he has on the floor and the shotgun shoots up out of the floor. I was like, I want one of those.
Yeah.
I want that, you know, he comes back with this whole thing is filled with his one-liners. You know, he
takes
the Deadite, Shemp shoves his head into the cabinet and shoots him in the back of the head and says, mama should have taught you to knock. And it's so, even after the whole battle at the end, he's like, the first thing I got to do is see a guy about this book. The second first thing I got to do was cardio. Because my heart is jackhammering like a quarterback on prom night.
Yeah.
This is Ash. You know,
his little ridiculous things that he says are just, they sound like old sayings, but they're not. You know?
But we haven't heard them. And then Ash says them, so it makes him cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Ash is cool, right?
He's the epitome of cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, this, and one thing I like about these episodes, I mean, it's, this whole season is telling one story, and each episode is a constant continuation from the previous episode to the next episode. And even season to season, it's that way. And I appreciate that so much because it does make it feel like, even though, you know, you watch the first season and it's what, 5 hours worth of video content.
I think
really
so. Yeah.
Watching one movie. I mean, if you sit and watch it in one sitting, it's like you watch a 5 hour movie. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that a lot. And me as a fan, Evil Dead is my favorite franchise out there.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, for them to do that and make me happy. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. For me, this is like the perfect balance of Evil Dead awesomeness. It very much doesn't forget the sort of serious gruesomeness that was in at least the first one. The first one was a lot more serious, and then the second one was a lot more wacky. This one seems to strike that perfect balance of the entire trilogy with the humor and the gore and the seriousness, and it just kind of, it keeps rotating through those things, and it's so much fun. I honestly think this is my favorite iteration of the Evil Dead period. Like, I love all the Evil Dead stuff, but this as just an expression of the Evil Dead is perfect. It's perfectly balanced, in my opinion.
I agree. You know, and it was so, the guy even got Mimi Rogers, you know, coming in here, and she plays, you know, Kelly's mom. And Mimi Rogers was so into it that she wanted to do as many of her own practical stunts as possible.
Really? Now,
Mimi Rogers is not an action star. She's not a horror movie star. And she was up there in age as well. She's probably pretty close to Bruce Campbell's age, if not maybe a little bit older. But she definitely was so into it that she did as many of her own stunts as she possibly could. Within, you know, because of insurance reasons, what they would let her do, really.
Yeah.
But that was interesting, too. That whole series with Kelly and her mom and, you know, the big fish. What does Ash say? Sometimes you got to use a small fish to catch the big fish.
Oh, yeah. And yeah.
Pablo says, so you're the big fish? You know, yeah. So, and it works out great. You know, that whole scene, the whole episode with Mimi Rogers and how that it works into everything. Everything that happens there really cements Kelly's spot within the Ghost Beaters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the end when they bury the bodies and Ash puts up the crosses, which he's done throughout all the movies. Whenever he's killed his girlfriends and stuff like that, he's buried them and put a cross over their grave. But you do know they were Jewish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
The way he gets so irritated with her, too. He's like, well, I wish you had told me that.
and we kind of see that when we flash back to when Ash first met Kelly, you know, where he's like, oh, you know, I want to thank your mom. And he's like, she's like, my mom died 6 months ago, or whatever. And he's like, oh, next time, maybe you should thank you. Because that's kind of rude. So we see that part as well. And then, you know, we're moving
on. Funny.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say it's funny because later on it kind of plays up when Kelly gets possessed and see the demon is trying to pretend to be that he's like, oh, no, Kelly again. The demon is gone. But if I die, put a cross on my grave. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, you son of a. I like that there was a bit of a payoff, but yet they were still kind of making fun of the payoff at the same time. That was more thought that I thought the show was going to give to storytelling.
But because they did those things, it's something that gets you in there more, you know, you appreciate it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we have to absolutely have more fuck ups from Ash. And then, you know, and this is a thing too, the glorious thing about Ash is that he creates all these problems, but then he's the one that fixes the problem. So you think, oh, Ash is awesome, but he created the problem initially as well. But you know, because they go to this books from beyond place because he wants to find out a way to reverse all of this stuff.
That wonderful bookstore.
Yeah, I always wanted to find a bookstore like that. You know, that has all those old style books and those antiquated stuff like that. It'd be awesome to check out just what they have there. You know.
Yeah.
Sophia.
Yeah. I mean, Ghostbusters and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they all have these weird little bookstores that have these leather bound occult books from the 1400s that can summon all manner of demons. And I'm like, I've never once run into that shit at Barnes and Noble or, you know, any of these little places around town.
I've always tried looking for I go into some of these old bookstores, maybe they got a section like that. I think it's all movie hype.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it would be fun. I would love it, but I don't see that. That doesn't seem to be a very common thing. I feel like you might be able to bump into that in New York City, but even then, I think that might be wishful thinking.
Yeah, maybe. But then we also find out that Ruby has the Kandarian dagger, you know, and we introduce Ruby, which up until this point, she goes by Ruby Nobi. So up until this point here, we presume that she is who she says she is, the sister of Annie Nobi that got killed in part two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, later on, we find out that that's false, but she has the Kandarian dagger. So she, you know, and we find out that the Kandarian dagger, as she rubs it across one of the Deadites' faces, it burns them. So we find out that this Kandarian dagger actually has more power. And it's not the first time we've seen that. I think even in the first Evil Dead, when they have They have the Canarian dagger and it stabs one of the guys in the back. It's smoking. It's burning as it's killing him. Mm-hmm. And so we see in that movie. So there's correlation there, you know, and it actually buys into that to let you know that, hey, we're going forward. We've already built. And that's something that another thing I keep saying this over and over again. I can appreciate this over and over again, but bringing that Kandarian dagger in as major plot point, which travels through all the series 1, 2, and 3, you know, I love that. And I love that Ruby has it after we find out who Ruby is at the end.
Yeah.
Summoning the demon. What was his name? Elagos. Elagos. He looked awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what is, oh yeah, he's one of those low level, supposed to be one of those low level demons or whatever it is. And so they summon him. And of course we know that because they say, do not break the salt circle, we know that Ash is going to break it, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what's going to happen. And this whole thing, once Elagos gets out and starts terrorizing everybody, and then they eventually get away. I'm trying to beat up a little bit here because we've been talking about the first few episodes. So then our heroes get away. They Pablo tells them that his uncle is a brujo, a witch doctor. So we need to go see Brujo. He can help us out. Elagos is gone. We don't know where Elagos goes, but we find out in the next episode, you know, where they're actually going to Brujo's house. And as they're driving, they're pulling along this camper that Ash has been living in. And he's driving that Delta 88, that same Delta 88 that's in every single Sam Raimi movie. He's driving it and he's pulling a damn full-size camper.
Yeah.
Man. But then we find out, this is where we find out that Ash had actually nitrous installed in the Delta. Okay, so they hit that nitrous and it's going good for a moment, till the car breaks down. And they basically coast into Brujo's property. You know, yeah. That's basically what happened. But it's cool how that visual effect when, you know, the evil or whatever it is, you know, that's chasing them, as it hits the property line of Brujo's, how it just kind of does that funnel and just comes back over. That was kind of cool. I like that visualization there. That was kind of neat.
Yeah. I also said Ash owes like two or three payments still on the car before he owns it. You still don't own that piece of shit.
Yeah, 3 more payments left and she's mine.
That was a hell of a good joke, man.
You know, but then they get there. Ash talks to Brujo. Brujo actually puts Ash and a peyote. We're not peyote. What was it? It wasn't peyote.
Oh, something like ayahuasca or something like that. Ayahuasca. It was something in that. Was
yeah,
that
it? Ayahuasca. That's what it is. Yeah. Puts him on an ayahuasca trip so he could find out how to defeat evil. And in this whole time, while Ash is tripping, we find out that Kelly's possessed by Elagos. So Ash, in his tripping dream, finds out that the answer is within him and he needs to go back to where it all started. So he learns from this that he needs to go back to the cabin. And Kelly tries to kill Pablo unsuccessfully, comes back in, tries to kill Ash. And this whole scene was kind of cool. The flashback, Ash flashing back, thinking that he's choking Elagos, but he's actually choking Kelly.
Mm.
And then the whole scene with Pablo getting so upset. And the way that, you know, they play Ray Santiago, how he plays off that he's so in love with De Lorenzo, it's awesome. I mean, yeah. You believe it. But do you know he's gay?
Oh, I mean, is he really?
He's very gay.
I mean, I shouldn't be surprised, but he played it well. He pulled it off. So, hey, good for him. Good acting.
I had no idea. I follow him on Instagram, and I had no idea until I saw some of his posts on Instagram, and I was like, oh, I didn't know I wanted to. I don't think I wanted to see that much of you, Ray.
Right.
But he does a great job. Great acting. You know, he's in love with Kelly. And of course, Kelly, the possessed, plays off of that and tries to kill him. Doesn't work. But they end up doing both Ash and Pablo agree that Kelly was more fun when she was possessed. Mm-hmm. I found that interesting. But one of the things we also learn here is that Ash's dream place to be is Jacksonville, Florida. Have you ever been to Jacksonville?
I have. Yeah, I have. And they're not to besmirch it, but I mean, there's nothing really memorable about it. It's a Florida. It's like every other Florida town I've ever been in that was aggressively average. And so that's why it was just the way he definitively says it, too. He's like, Jacksonville, Florida.
Like, yeah, it's like
what a fucking weird mecca that is.
Well, paradise. I mean, Jacksonville, I used to have to go there for work a lot. It's kind of a shithole. You know, it's not, I mean, it's not Detroit level shithole, but it's not that nice of a place.
Yeah. I mean, to have nowhere mecca, you want to actively go.
I'm thinking like, oh, the place I want to go most of all, Scotland or the Florida Keys. If you're going to stay in Florida, the Keys, you know, something like that, but not Jacksonville. But that's Ash. You know, that's where he wants to go. And another thing we learned is that Ash comes to the conclusion that he's supposed to shoot first and ask questions never.
Yeah.
And this is how he kills Elgos. You know, Elgos keeps disappearing and coming up, and he throws his gun up in the air, gets his chainsaw hand, and turns around and just shoots. And there's slimy Elgos everywhere. Wow.
I know every body in the show, when it's hit with any kind of stabbing object or projectile, it's interesting how everything is just so primed to explode like a tire. And everything just goes everywhere, and it's disgusting. I love it.
Yes. And then, so Brujo gets killed. Kelly gets freed. Elgos is killed. So our team packs up and heads out. But then Ruby makes it. Ruby and Amanda team up, and then we find out that Ruby also has Ash's original hand. I love how they tied that in.
I did too. Ruby's,
I think he's trying to find its owner. I thought that was great how they tied that in there. You know, bringing Cousin It into the, or Thing, bringing Thing into the mix here is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, because at first it's just kind of acting like it's slowly coming back to life. And then at the end of that one episode, yeah, it's just cruising around like it's in the Addams Family. And I thought that was a great touch. It's like that's a good, you know, old tribute, but it's also keeping up with the details of the lore of this ridiculous franchise we all love. And that was just fun.
I loved it too. It was great. And then we have the breakfast scene with the ghost beaters. They're at breakfast, and Ash is just killing some pancakes. And then, of course, he goes to collect money. And this is it's so hilarious. Well, you said you had it this round. Oh, doesn't sound like something I would say. And I quote, you know, and they're going back and forth. And this whole thing where he tries to get the waitress into the bathroom to pay for it, you know, that way.
Yeah. And like he's doing her a favor.
Yeah. And then he goes into the bathroom, he fills the sink up with water, and he puts these, I'm guessing they're like cinnamon mints, into the water and melts them up, uses it as cologne.
I forgot that. I know that's such a lame ass, you know, backwoods retrofit for, oh, this will make me smell good. I would have pulled that shit in high school, absolutely, as broke as I was.
And then, you know, of course, Amanda rains on his parade. And one of the things in this scene here is that his face is in the urinal. You know, she throws him to the ground, and his face is in like piss. And he is there. And I'm like, that's kind of nasty. You know, but.
And I thought that was the grossest scene. That is until season two, and I will not say anything until we get to season, but you know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Season two or season, is this season two? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even want to spoil that. I'm looking forward to watching that shit. But yeah, the piss scene up to that point was just, oh, that's rough. Look at them. They're so gross.
Amanda's got him handcuffed and taken him out of the bathroom. And he looks over at the waitress. See, she knows this could have been, she ruined it, but she knows. Wow. But then, of course, you know, he says, I'm the killer of killers. You know, I kill killers. I don't kill people. But this is when we find out, well, not when we find out, but shit hits the fan here with everybody in the damn restaurant, really. I mean, a bunch of people get killed. The little kid gets thrown up into the damn ceiling fan and gets chopped up. And the facial expressions on Ash, too. He's like, oh no. And it's like something.
Yeah, it's very much like a mimic of the audience where you're like, oh, ah, shit. Yeah. It's like he's acting as your proxy.
Yep. But, you know, Kelly comes in and Pablo, they all clear out all the deadites. And we find out here that Kelly has some anger issues as she's taking that waitress and she's slicing her face up in the meat slicer. Then starts beating her head in with the, long after she's dead, beating her head in with the meat tenderizing mallet. Just beating her and beating. they pan back and you see Pablo and Ash looking shocked through the window.
She's a little concerned.
But it's this kind of thing here that really cements Pablo and Kelly's position in Evil Dead lore. You know, it really does.
They're great because they really do. It's like they add and elevate Ash. Seeing them as a trio, I really was surprised at how much I rooted for the three of them. It really came across by the time I was watching season two. I didn't just care about Ash. I really wanted them to be okay as well. Like, I wanted them to make it through this too. And that's a pretty good testament to their acting abilities, because a lot of the times when you introduce a new character into something like this that's been around for so long, people, there's massive backlash. But I have yet to see that with Kelly and Pablo.
And that's one of the, you know, toward the end of the season here, it's one of the things that Ash makes it a thing. He's like, I'm going down here to the cellar to take care of this because I'm going to protect the people that I care about. And Kelly's like, that's me, right? And he's like, yeah. And then that's when that little Samara Weaving, me too? He's like, yeah, just stay behind her.
Yeah.
It's a testament to saying that Ash cares about these characters as well now. So, and it's great, you know. But we left out that Ash has some links to a militia. Well, a guy that has links to a militia, Lem, and they play a big role in the next episode after this. But before we get to the militia scene, we get to see Lucy Lawless topless.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, come on.
I'll never argue against that. I'll be like, yeah, let's more of that. That's good.
I mean, I don't care how old she is. I think I probably rewound that. I don't care how old I am. I was doing one of those freeze frame things like from back, you know, Phoebe Cates and you know, what's that show? All the freeze frame with Phoebe Cates coming out of the water naked. I was like, ooh, that's Lucy. Oh. Like I was, you know, 14 again. I'm like, okay.
I know. Yeah. It's always exciting when you see somebody from your youth do that. You're just, oh, it's like they knew. It was like they knew I needed this. Thank you for adding to my life.
Now when I die, I will be happy because I got to see it. But then, you know, we have this whole episode with the militia. And I got to say, out of all of the episodes in this season, this is probably my least favorite. There was some character building between Ash and Amanda. But it seemed like a lot of filler, you know, especially with Pablo and Kelly and, you know, killing the deadites and trying to get, you know, Pablo's trying to figure out what kind of, am I a rusty chainsaw guy or, you know, whatever. Out of all the episodes, this was my least favorite. To me, it just felt like a lot of filler.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
Yeah, that one, it felt like it had a lot of action, but I didn't feel like, I just didn't care as much as the other episodes where they were doing something kind of similar. So, yeah, I can see where that would be your least favorite. I mean, I still enjoyed it, but I can understand why because not a great deal happens. It's like we could have probably gotten a summary and then just moved on to the next one.
I mean, they get some weapons, but other than that, you know, Ash doesn't get, I mean, he still has his shotgun and his chainsaw hand. And he's got his new hand that they built for him, but he doesn't get any new weapons. You know, Kelly and Amanda and Pablo get some nice weapons, but this episode was kind of almost, to me, it felt like they could have kind of left it out and just had, you know, everybody coming out on a stash of weapons and they got some extra weapons. I mean, I like it because it's part of Ash vs. Evil Dead, but like I said, it's my least favorite of all the episodes of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. But then, you know, Ash dumps the Ghost Beaters. He, you know, at the end of the episode, they're talking about, hey, we're going to, let's go kick some ass, we'll kick some ass. And they turn around, Ash is gone. My question is, they're in Michigan. You know, it's been made clear that they're in Michigan. The original Evil Dead, they were going on vacation in Tennessee.
Yeah.
So when Ash leaves the Ghost Beaters and goes off walking because he's going to take care of it himself, then we show, they show him walking up to the cabin. How long was he walking?
You know, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good question. That's a that's like a month long walk, I would say.
And then how, you know, it turns around, Amanda in the next episode finds him at the cabin or going up to the cabin. And how does she know she was tracking him? Okay. But I don't know. That was kind of, let's just forget that and enjoy Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Oh, I think. But then they show that the hand had made it there. And I think I assumed that she had some sort of weird connection to the hand. And then that gave her some, like a psychic connection. I mean, I'm assuming a lot, quite frankly. Probably completely full of shit, but I think I just kind of, that was how I filled in the blanks in my head. I probably shouldn't look too deep into this.
Well, and that's what, there's some points here where you just gotta, okay, it's Ash vs. Evil Dead. No. Yeah, the hand makes it to the cabin. Ash makes it there. Oh, when Ash is walking to the cabin, he finds that little bird and I'm so sorry. And it's a dead-eye bird. It's like a possessed bird. That was one of the things I put, dead-eye bird? Wow.
Yeah, nothing is safe, man. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, then we see the hand, an eyeball coming out of it, and we know what's going to happen with that. We've seen that, you know, stuff coming out. And then we're introduced to the hikers. Samara Weaving. Pleasant to look at.
Yeah.
She's a little thin for my taste, but she's pleasant to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still got that sort of tasty vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've seen, was it Ready or Not, or the Babysitter. Babysitter move. Anyway, I should think about something else. Somebody's going to get creeped out. There's this old man going,
That's why I kind of just left it at pleasant to look at, Dave. One thing that I know that there was some people that were pointing out some inconsistencies with is when Ash goes into the cabin here, the cellar door is in one piece. But we know that in Evil Dead 2, he uses chainsaw to cut it open to get down in there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look closely at the cellar door when he's going in and they're panning to it, it looks like there's a cut in the middle.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. And the only reason I was looking at that was because I had read that people were, you know, oh, it's an inconsistency. But I don't, maybe the cabin put itself together again or something. Because we know that the cabin basically alive in an entity in it, of itself. So when I saw that, if you get a chance, rewatch that episode and see if you can see that as well. Okay. It looks like it's a cut that the cabin might have put back together or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then we have evil Ash on the scene. Ash has to go out to the work tool shed to get, I don't remember, what's he going out there to get? He's going out to the tool shed to get something.
I don't remember.
He goes out there, he sees Linda's head is still in the vise from part two. And of course, she starts talking to him. I'll suck you off real good. Don't you want to skull fuck me? Wow.
You look a little nasty. I was like, wait, that's not Linda.
I know. But
nice, damn it.
Looks. And then we see that Amanda's inside with evil Ash. And then she sees the hand. And we have the whole back and forth with that. She ends up cutting his hand off. Can you say again? It's not really at. So that's confusing. It's not cut off again. It's cut off for the first time, but it was the original hand of the original Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, Amanda dies, which is sad because I remember when I first saw this, I was really hoping that Amanda, they were going to build off of Amanda and make her a character that was going to last, kind of like they ended up doing with Pablo and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't. She dies. And, it's kind of sad.
Yeah. It's okay. Like you know that there has to be someone's got to die in order for there to be consequences and impact and whatnot. But it was kind of a bummer because she was a good counterpoint to Ash's bullshit when he starts hitting on her. And she's just like, I can't believe you're hitting on me right now. But she's kind of amused by him because he's such a dipshit. And so it was fun watching her be amused by him. So that was why I was bummed out. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, they gotta conk somebody to, you know, give some sort of feel of consequence.
And move on to the battle between the Ashes. Ash and Evil Ash. You know, they're, well, if you're just like me, I know you got a bum shoulder. I know you got a trick knee. And he says, so that means I know you got soft balls. And I'm thinking, don't we all have soft balls? Really? I mean,
they'd have to be gelatinous to be any softer than they already are, you know?
Oh my God.
Weirdly specific.
Yeah. So, and then the whole scene, you know, Ash versus Ash, and then, you know, Kelly and Pablo come in and they're at the back and forth. No, kill him. No, kill him. And well, and then the right Ash, the real Ash, says, well, all right, just kill us both. I can be done with this shit. And you know, yeah, well, that's Ash. Because Ash would say something like that.
And then, yeah, that makes sense that he would be just like, oh, I'm so tired of all this nonsense.
And the whole
like death
the whole,
is preferable.
And the whole subtle hints at racism throughout the whole thing. I wouldn't say it's subtle hints at racism. I think it's subtle hints at racial jokes, because Ash is not really playing on that level mentally. Yeah. As a lot of heart, you know, so I don't think that it's really gets to him like it's racism.
Yeah.
You know, but he, all these jokes he's saying about Pablo, we're going to go with some churros. That's not because you're Mexican, because they're a tasty treat. And one of the things that he says, Pablo says, well, you're not racist against Asians. Well, what? How could I be? They have such little hands. And they're like,
or when Pablo's like, you know, I'm not Mexican. And he's like, that's the spirit. You're like, what the hell does that mean?
Oh, my gosh. But as Ash is cutting up the book, or his evil Ash, the blood gets into the book. Book comes alive. Start screaming, Ash, use me. I don't know, Dave, for so long, Ash has been bumbling through using the Necronomicon when he had to. Mm-hmm. If the Necronomicon actually came alive and told you how to use it, would you be more apt to use it?
Yeah, see, I don't think so.
Well,
I think that would just scare the living hell out of me. I was like, this thing has been nothing but trouble for me, so I don't want any part. It's lying, I'm sure.
But has it been trouble for you because you didn't know how to use it properly and it could now teach you as long as you supply it with blood?
That feels like taking instructions from a bully, you know? This is how you kick my ass.
Yeah.
Something tells me I'm getting set up.
But yeah, it's one of those things. It's a temptation, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why they throw
the
that
big
in
red
there.
Button.
Yeah. But of course, Ash doesn't fall for it. And then, you know, we also, the scene where Pablo and Kelly are out in the forest with these hikers trying to get them to another path, and they meet a dead-eyed Amanda. And the way she has her hands in the hiker's mouth, and she uses them as puppets. Hi, I'm Kelly. Hi, I'm Pablo. Do you love me? Wow. That was well done. That was well done. And then, of course, we have Ruby. And this was I love this scene where she's flying through the air and, like, spinning, flipping. And she lands on the ground just in time to face off Deadeye Amanda. It was awesome. I like that scene.
Yeah.
But it's also a scene where... is there something more? Well, we already learned when we see the naked scene with Ruby, we know that there's something more to her.
Mm-hmm.
But now even her jumping through the air like that, we're like, there's something special about this woman. Which we now find out once she gets back to Ash and she tells Ash, you have to give me the book. And I think it's interesting that she can't take it. You know, it has to be given to her. And one of the things that, you know, she says, let me take the load off your shoulders, Ash. And Pablo says, yeah, F.A., let her take your load. And the first thing I thought of was, wow, really?
I know. It's like the entire show is trying so hard to repress this sort of teenage boy sense of humor. And it just kind of breaks through every now and then. You know? It's like you could feel it under the surface. And little lines like that, you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's kind of like when, you know, back when you were in school and you were going through sex ed and you hear penis and you're like,
yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, my,
did you hear that?
Look at your friend. But Amanda, as a deadite, looked kind of freaky, don't you think? I mean, she kind of kind of scary a little bit. I was like, I would.
But in a sexy, weird, peeling way,
yeah. Yeah, yes. But then, you know, Samara Weaving is the only, I don't remember what her character's name is, honestly.
I don't know.
She's the only hiker, Heather. Her name is Heather.
Oh, okay.
And she's hot on Pablo, but Kelly says, no, he has a girlfriend. Okay. And this whole time, you know, she tells Pablo, you're kind of like my little brother. Pablo, talk about mixed signals. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And this is no knock on Kelly, but if I've been getting those vibes and then suddenly this girl is going, hey, I'm into you, better believe I'd forget real quick all the effort I was putting into Kelly just a minute ago. It wouldn't have been a problem.
Just give me 15 minutes. Yeah, give me 5 minutes. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Samara's leg, Heather's leg, it's tore up. The way they got that bone is actually sticking out of her shin. It broke. I'm like, dude, that's, yeah, you should be screaming a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That, really. But then, you know, they get back to the cabin and they have to, Ruby tells Ash that she has to, or he has to cut the face off of the book.
Right.
Mm. Now, this kind of got to me a little bit because when he starts cutting and the book is screaming in pain.
Yeah.
Kind of like, ooh, stop. I know this is like the, you know, what causes all the issues, but you're hurting it.
You know? Right. Yeah. Like you felt almost a little bad for it.
Yeah.
But I thought that was cool the way that they did that, especially after when they finally get it off and then kind of becomes its own entity and lands on Pablo.
Yeah. Pablo gets that mask that possesses it. And Ruby controls him. It's kind of like Ruby's link controlling Pablo, you know, his possession. And that's the big reveal here is that now we know that Ruby tells, yeah, I know who wrote this book, or I know what I'm doing with this book. I wrote this book. So we learn, oh, so Ruby's actually one of the dark ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a fun little twist and an expansion on the lore. Again, that was one of the things I love about the show is I love that they just realize you can't just stick in this cabin. You've got to expand the story, and they do it really well.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, how Ruby uses the book now and Pablo, which later on, what is it in season three? Isn't Kelly calling my powerful little vagina because he actually gave birth. Now, granted, it was orally. I mean, he was spitting these things up, but he gave birth to Ruby's children, which is kind of this whole scene.
Weird.
Especially when, you know, Ash is looking through the door. He's like, well, first he says, I'm coming, Pedro. I mean, Pablo. And you're like, oh, man. But then, you know, you have this scene where he's watching through the door and he's like, oh, this is why I didn't have kids. Should I go in there? He's debating, and do I need to do this? But of course he does.
Yeah. And that's part of what makes him fun is that he has those human reactions to it. It's like this is the shit that's going on in your head when you're trying to do something you really don't want to do.
Yeah.
Your brain is going, this is bullshit. And you're like, no, it's okay. I'm going to tough it out. You know, the exterior is trying to tough it out. The inside is saying what Ash is saying, where he's just like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I here? I'm an idiot.
And he goes in and he blasts Ruby for like four times with a shotgun. And this is another thing that I like. And we see him reload. He doesn't have like endless supply of, you know, double gauge or double shot in his 12 gauge. We actually see him reload. And it's something small, but I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But he has his chance now, as he says, to play a little neck music. But you know, then you got this fight with Pablo and Kelly comes in to save the day. But then earlier in the movie, we left out that Ruby approached or kind of made an offer to Ash, right? Makes this offer. You can have Jacksonville. You can have everything you wanted. Just make this deal with me and You can have it. Ash turned it down at that time. But at this point here, we're at this battle here. Ruby tells him, your mortal toys won't do you any good anymore. And he says something, or she's getting ready to kill him. And he says, before you kill me, I just got to ask you something. Have you lost weight? And she's kind of like, put it back. And he does the whole thing where he gets the Kandarian dagger from her and he starts.
Yeah, I got it.
This isn't a mortal toy, is it? And that is Ash as well.
Yeah. He uses the tools in his arsenal that, and he knows which ones are the most effective.
Let's talk about these creepy kids. They have no eyes.
Yeah. And that's always a good effect.
Yeah, they have no eyes. And it's just like, you know, and Ash does kill one of them. And of course, it blows up and this slime and platter everywhere. But during this final fight here, I think we get a feeling for how much Pablo and Kelly actually mean to Ash, because he is willing to accept this deal, basically letting, as Ruby said, or as he says, Ruby would be like the godfather over all the demons, right? So we see that he's willing to accept this deal, but he also wants Pablo freed from this mask, this possession thing, and he wants Kelly with him.
Yeah.
And of course he wants $10,000, but you know how that goes. She's not a bank. But we actually see how that his care for these characters, it's real. He's not just a selfish, you know, savior of mankind anymore. He's actually cares for the characters. And I like that a lot too.
I do too, because you kind of get that sense that he's sort of a father figure to them in a weird way. But this is kind of the first time he really acknowledges it, when he's just like, okay, I'll take the deal, but I have to have them with me as well. And yeah, I thought that was a nice, unusual moment of levity. And it's brief as all hell, but it's there and it makes an impact, because those kinds of moments are pretty rare in this show. It's mostly ridiculous. So that actually, for me, that gives it a little more substance, honestly.
And it's also a tool to help you make these characters a little bit more likable as well. You know, you not only now, you know, that Ash cares for them. So it's okay for you to care for them as well. Kind of deal, you know, because throughout the whole first season, you're growing to love these characters. And I think at the end of this episode, it's the culmination of it. Go ahead, Dave. It's okay to care for Pablo and Kelly. Ash does too. You know, I thought that was great. Yeah. And of course, the closing scene where they're driving out of town towards Jacksonville in the Delta, and Pablo and Kelly are like, what did you do? And Ash is just like, I saved your lives. How about a little bit of gratitude? Come on.
Yeah.
And Ash is driving away. They turn on the radio and all hell's breaking loose. The city's falling apart. Demons are everywhere. Sinkholes are opening up behind him. And Ash is clueless because he has Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's all he sees. Jacksonville ahead. No need to look at the doom behind you.
And that's the end of the season there. I mean, that's how it ends. They're driving away, and as soon as they're driving out, a big sinkhole opens up behind them and basically swallows up, you know, whatever was behind them.
Yeah.
And we're left wanting more. Right?
Yeah, because you've been told who wrote the Book of the Dead. You've got new characters that you care about. The world is ending, and you're like, all right, let's go down this road. You guys have officially hooked me. The hook's in my mouth. Reel me in.
Now, I'm pretty sure I know, Dave, but let me know. How much did you hate Ash vs. Evil Dead?
Yeah, I don't carry hate in my heart for anything, especially the Evil Dead franchise. And yeah, I did. Besmirch its good name would be unheard of. So no, I have no hate. It's nothing but love for this thing. It's amazing. I'm really looking forward to rewatching the other two. This is a fun show.
I think we kind of spoiled how we felt about this early on in this episode.
Oh yeah, this is completely unobjective. We are fully subjective on here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love this show. I have probably binged watched at least season one, at least, let's say 16 times.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I've seen the whole series seven, 8 times.
No, I've watched kidding.
It. Yeah, I love this show. It's definitely whenever I'm like, what do I want to watch? You know what? Ash vs. Evil Dead. And I'll just watch it. I love it that much.
It's really hard not to watch the show and not get at least a small smile on your face the silliness and just its general, its upbeat vibe. As weird as that might sound, it's very upbeat.
It definitely is. And as we know, Ash is the savior of mankind. Not very bright, but good at what he does.
Killers. He follows his own path, and as crooked as it may be, at least it gets you where you need to go.
Absolutely, it does. Now, Dave, we've come to the end of this episode, and we're running a little bit longer than usual, but I kind of figured it would because it's Ash vs. Evil Dead. I mean,
yeah.
But honestly, we're not as long as I thought we would be running, so that's not too bad, you know?
No, that's not. This is not bad. I mean, this would be like a long movie episode, so it's kind of like a short TV episode in a way.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like I said earlier, we could have really spent an hour talking about just each episode.
Yeah. I think going the season route is probably the better way, because if we did it episode by episode, I mean, if you want to do episode by episode, we can. But it's like that's going to be that's a long road for us to go down. But I'm here because I care.
Yeah, that's for another podcast. I've already been thinking about doing a different podcast on that.
Yeah,
that's a lot. That's
a lot. Yeah, it is.
You know? But Dave, as we come to the end here, where can everybody find you?
Check me out at PiedmontTriadPodcast.com. That's where all of my podcast episodes about the Piedmont Triad area of North Carolina is going to be located. I'm on all of the podcast platforms, the Apple, the Spotify, the iHeartRadios, all that stuff. I'm all there. But if you can't find an episode, or if you run into any problems, there's a website and you can listen to all that very easily and censor free over at PiedmontTriadPodcast.com.
Nice. And anybody that's been listening to this show for any length of time is pretty much well aware of what you do. But what kind of episodes do you do?
Let's see. Well, I try to focus on the sort of stranger people and places around this area. So I don't talk to real estate agents or like Chamber of Commerce people. My most recent episode, I'm talking with lady who started something called the Triad Witches Social, where pagans and witches and they all get together and kind of chat about their religion. So I was absolutely fascinated by that. So it was coincidentally topical for Halloween coming up that I have an episode where I'm talking to a self-professed witch. So if you want to check that out, it's there, and she was fun to talk to and very informative. So that's the kind of stuff you can plan on getting into if you decide to check out my podcast.
Yeah, I follow Madame May now and love everything that she's.
Yeah, she's a trip, isn't she?
I never would have known about her if I didn't listen to your podcast. But check Dave out. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dave, once again, I want to thank you for joining me for Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 1. It's been a fun ride. I love this show. I continue to love it.
Oh, yeah. I'm very much looking forward to the Season 2. Busting at the seams, and I'm really looking forward to disturbing the remaining members of my family with the scene that we know we're talking about. I need to shut my mouth. I'm building it up too much. I'm looking forward to Season 2. I'll just say that.
It'll be fun. It'll be real fun. Prince Albert and everything. Prince Albert. But thanks again, everybody out there. Sweet dreams, love, peace, and chicken grease. And that's gonna do it for the day. Thanks for hanging out with me and letting me bend your ear for a while. Ain't no time for bad shine. And until next time, don't forget. You're wrong.
Later, Tater.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night and God bless America.